With the 80th anniversary of the Munich Agreement coming soon, Tom McEncrow once again focuses on the Czech side of Munich, talking to the deputy director of the Institute for the Study of Totalitarian Regimes, Mr. Ondřej Matejka, about what it was like to live in the region that lay at the heart of the conflict, as well as how Munich is remembered in the Czech Republic today.
With me here is Ondřej Matejka, the deputy director of the USTR. Mr. Matejka, how was the Sudetenland viewed after the founding of the First Republic? Were there any undertones of an eventual crisis?
Definitely there were undertones of an eventual crisis since the very beginning of the new state. Actually, the first crisis after the founding of the new state, the significant day was the 1st of March 1919, where the elections into the National Assembly of Austria was held, and German-speaking citizens of Czechoslovakia wanted to take part in this election, and they wanted, via electing into this into this National Assembly in Vienna, they wanted to become a part of Austria and not a part of Czechoslovakia. And there were huge demonstrations in all over German towns and cities in Sudetenland, and there were many deaf people, especially in Katyn, in Kaden in German, where the machine gun was used in order to discipline the German crowd. So since the very beginning, the idea of having a common state between Czech and Germans was a very complicated one. During the next years, step by step, the relationship was getting better and better, especially from the economical point of view, because the economic situation in Germany was getting worse and worse, and the economic situation of Czechoslovakia was actually much better. So the loyalty of the German citizens of Czechoslovakia steadily grew up, and they were German-speaking political parties, were member of the Czechoslovak government to the end, until the late 30s, which means there were a kind of a cohabitation and for collaboration. But in fact, from the very beginning, the fact of living in the Czechoslovak state for the Germans wasn't simply not accepted.
That kind of brings me to the next question, because of course earlier in 1938, certain demands for Sudeten Germans were set out by Konrad Helmlein, who was the leader of the Sudeten German Party. Now, the party itself was pushed by Hitler to refuse concessions. Could an agreement have been reached, however, between the Czechoslovak state and the region's German-speaking inhabitants if there wasn't this Hitler factor, this factor bent on war?
I think if there wouldn't this Nazi factor, and if there wouldn't be the factor of the crisis and so on, and if the Czechoslovak state had become more time, means several dozens of years, I think that that there were some preconditions in order to find a way how to live in a common state. Of course, the Czechs had made many mistakes. From the very beginning, for example, the main mistake was to see Germans as a so-called minority. You know, if you have a state with 3.5 millions of Germans in a state with 12, 13 millions of citizens, it's not a minority. You know, there were more Germans than Slovaks in the country. And the Slovaks were understood as a state nation, and the Germans not. I think if there would be more time, there were some preconditions. Since it was one country, a long tradition of living together, and the country profited from this cohabitation. So I think if there would be more time and not this Nazi factor, maybe would be possible to find a solution. I think even this situation then after the war, when the expulsion of Germans was on the agenda, for many of the Germans, even for the Czechs, it was a thing that they couldn't imagine. That's also the reason why the Germans after the war haven't haven't left this country by their own will, because they just couldn't imagine that. It's a different situation than in Poland. The Germans really left the regions where, because the Red Army came, because the Poles came, and so on. They were aware of the fact that the borders will be changed. Accepting this fact that we are somehow living here together was an important aspect, which I think would be important. But of course, the Nazi regime, the war, and then this was a escalation of the tension between the Czechs and Germans, and it finally ended by a catastrophe.
There was very significant violence going on in Sudetenland in September 1938, with around 100 Czechoslovak personnel being killed in action and many hundreds wounded or abducted even into Germany. President Beneš would actually later state that the 17th of September was the beginning of an undeclared German-Czechoslovak war. I mean, what was the actual level of control that the state had in the region at this time?
The military control that was definitely there. Even after the Sudeten-German Freikorps was founded, and even though they have killed dozens of Czechoslovak officials, they weren't capable to really to start a kind of a Sudeten-German uprising. Even though this term, Sudeten-German uprising, is in use, it was a very, very fast breakdown. It broke very fast down, this uprising, and from the military point of view, wasn't really successful. Of course, they disturbed the people and so on, and there were crowds on the streets, there were demonstrations, but they were not capable to
attain power,
to take power, to take over the power, and they were not capable to spread in all the Sudeten-German regions. They were only in part of the regions. I think they were in 16 districts of maybe some 50 districts. They were kind of a uprising. The terror was there, but I wouldn't tell that the uprising, that there were not many incidents. The Hitler would need for his propaganda that the Czechs are, you know, they are using violence against the poor Sudeten Germans. There were literally no or very few of such accidents.
The actual situation on the ground, what would you liken it to? Would you say, for example, it was like Israel and Palestine nowadays? You know, I'm talking about September 38. Was it more intense? I mean, if you were a villager living in the Sudetenland, what would you have to count on?
As far as I know, the problem wasn't the point that the Czechoslovak state couldn't hold the borders. The problem was much more intern in the society living in the Sudetenland, where the pressure of the Nazis, of the German, of the Sudeten Germans from Sudeten Deutsche Partei, they were setting pressure towards other citizens, towards other towards people which were sympathizing with other political parties, especially against social democrats, against communists, and I think Sudetenland is a extraordinary example of becoming a totalitarian society, where one power by terror and by the social pressure is taking over power in the society. You know, it's just, there are many books about it. For example, there's a very interesting book. It's called Červený Nepomuk. It has been written after the war by a Sudeten German author, and it's a children book. And I think it's I'm reading it at that time with my children. So it's very nicely described how the parents of the young boy, that's a German boy, and he has a Czech friend, and this Czech-German friendship is getting into trouble because their other friends, you know, that they are against it. And the father, the German father of the German boy, he was a social democrat, but at the end he was the last social democrat in the village. And if he would stay the social democrat, he would lose the job. And so one day he came late from the pub, drunk, and he tells at home, well, It's a difficult situation, but under these circumstances, I think it's necessary that, and so on, and so on, and so on. And by the day, he was also a headline supporter. So, which is very, you know, I use it often as an example because it's very nicely shown how the social pressure works and how step by step the loyal people to the state, you know, I don't know how to tell it in English.
Hung out to dry.
Yeah. Maybe so. They were hung up to dry because, you know, they without the support. The problem was that the Czech state couldn't really help the people, the German people in Sudetenland. They were loyal to them, which is a kind of a tragedy, I think. We couldn't help these social democrats, these communists. Even from the very simple point of view, they were, of course, there were some German broadcasting, German-speaking broadcasting from the very beginning of the Czechoslovak radio, but it was only a very short time. Full-scale German-speaking broadcasting coming from Prague came very late. It came in actually the 37-38, and so they became the informations from the radio only from the Third Reich, which was, of course, that were Nazi interpretation of the political situation and so on. So I think that the Czechs really didn't take care about the Germans, and it was a huge mistake. I think they didn't take care about the social circumstances of the people in the Sudetenland.
Was there any attempt to capitalize on the so-called Munich betrayal by parties immediately after the agreement and also after the war? I'm talking about 1939 and 1945. And was there a difference in how individual parties portrayed it? I'm talking, for example, about democratic parties versus fascist or, you know, communist parties. Or was it the same? This sense of betrayal?
I think in fact, this experience with the Munich agreement led to the change in the politics in general. The decision of Edvard Beneš to start a partnership with the Soviet Union was definitely influenced by Munich. It was a kind of a consensus that we need a new partner in form of Soviet Union, and that was one of big Beneš mistakes. But it was not only his mistake, because actually all the political representation was somehow involved in this, and to secure the country, they thought it's necessary to have a better relationship with Soviet Union. So I wouldn't say that it was a kind of a struggle for that. It was a kind of a new consensus which everyone was taking into account, and that led to the new agreement between Czechoslovakia and Soviet Union, and it definitely changed the situation after the war. And was actually, it came step by step, so the orientation, the geopolitical orientation of the Czechoslovak politics before 38 and then after 45 is a very different one. And the key question was, of course, this experience with Munich.
How important is Munich in Czechoslovak memory today? Is it time to forget Munich or look at it differently?
I think there are many interesting aspects we can learn, which is only then possible if we have a open and free debate about this issue. And I would say there's a real debate about this. Even if I can mention the film that I've mentioned on already, the Ztracení v Mnichově. You have the film about Jan Masaryk, which very strongly they spotlight this betrayal of the West. And then you have different films coming from, for example, Czech Century, in this huge project of Czech television. This part of this chapter, or this one film dealing with Munich, is there's a totally different view. There's a really underlined the mistakes of the Czechs' politics. So, and this question whether we should fight or not is still an issue. And I think meanwhile it's possible to say that the people they really they can express their meaning about it very openly.